25 years ago this week, nearly 60% of Californians voted to pass Proposition 187, the initiative forbid free health care, education, and other state services to undocumented immigrants. And there was fiery rhetoric from both sides of the issue.
They keep coming. 2 million illegals in California. The federal government won't stop them at the border, yet requires us to pay billions to take care of them.
The illegal alien comes without any checking, and they often bring the diseases. So most of the contagious diseases are being brought in by the illegals.
You heard there just an excerpt from an ad and some dialogue surrounding the proposition. In the years since, courts have ruled it unconstitutional, but the effect of Prop 187 have been felt far and wide regardless. And according to our next guest, its passage in California marked the beginning of a Latino backlash that has turned the state blue ever since. Gustavo Arellano is a staff writer for the Los Angeles Times and host of a new podcast called This Is California, The Battle of 187, which can be heard on NPR's Latino USA. I spoke with him more about it.
We got to start in 1993. At this point, California, many people are saying the California dream is over. We just suffered through earthquakes. We're suffering through an epic drought. The LA riots happened a couple years ago. We're still in the midst of the worst economic situation since the Great Depression. So the middle class just feels defeated and humbled. So they have to look for a scapegoat, and they find it in ostensibly illegal immigration, but really California's changing demographics. Over the past 15 years, you've had a lot of immigrants from Latin America and Asia, and there's a lot of controversy. A lot of people are feeling uncomfortable about all these newcomers who are not immediately speaking English and assimilating.
You say in the podcast that Governor Pete Wilson at the time made California bluer than indigo. How does that come about, though? Like in 1994, the GOP was growing strong. This looked like a really good move for him, right?
Oh, yeah. No, 1994, it's Newt Gingrich's revolution. Pete Wilson has a tough re-election campaign at first, really behind in the polls, but latches on to this idea of Proposition 187 to a resounding victory. 187 wins by an even bigger margin, though, 59% to 41%. But in those seeds, that's what sparked this revolution that continues to this day, where Democrats have a supermajority of the state legislature. So both chambers, the Assembly and the State Senate, and the Democratic Party is run by Latinos who were college students or even high school students during the era of 187. They saw 187 as a direct attack on an existential attack on who they were. Mm-hmm. And they've been legislating ever since as like, you know what, we're going to have revenge on that California, the California that demonized us. We're going to create a California that says we're not going to demonize undocumented people anymore. In fact, we're going to embrace them and we're going to be stronger that way.
Let's talk about the reaction and your own reaction as well, right? You were in high school at the time?
Yeah, I was a sophomore in high school in the fall of 1994, so basically 25 years ago today. So what ended up happening is young Latinos, college students and high schoolers, they start walking out en masse. On November 2nd, 1994, mm-hmm. over 10,000 high schoolers across California marched. My entire high school walked out. I didn't, though. I stayed behind. Even though my dad was an undocumented immigrant, and even though I was opposed to 187, not only was I scared about walking out, and so I didn't do it, but I also just didn't understand. Like, I didn't think anything would be gained out of walking out. Hmm. Like, what could high schoolers do to change society, you know? That was my idea.
We'll get back to that as we talk about the legacy of this. But what about the conservatives? What about the people who had pushed for this? What was their reaction to it passing? Was it a surprise?
Oh, no, they were giddy. They knew from the start, because they had hit on a nerve of a bunch of Californians who were just sick and tired of changing demographics. They were also tired of what the proponent said was an unnecessary burden on the taxpayers of California. And after 187 passes, they get deluged with calls from people all across the United States saying, how could we replicate 187 in our states, in our municipalities? But the day after 187 passes, immediately there's 8 lawsuits on both the state level and the federal level trying to block 187, arguing that it's unconstitutional. Eventually, those lawsuits get bundled up into one. And in 1997, a federal judge rules it unconstitutional. The state of California appeals it up to the Ninth District Court of Appeals. But in 1999, the new governor, Gray Davis, decides to drop the appeal, effectively killing Proposition 187 for good.
Okay, so let's talk about the legacy then of this proposition, which you've sort of already hinted at is pretty twofold and maybe not exactly what was expected by some. How would you describe it? How do you characterize it?
It's a double-edged sword. Well, it also depends on what side of the political equation you're on, because In California, 187 backfired. Yes, it passed, but it sparked this political awakening among Latinos, and in a way where the politics are far, far more progressive, far more to the left than Latino politics used to be. At the same time, though, 187 sparked, as I said earlier, this movement of people across the country thinking, how could we replicate 187? And that's what happens. In Arizona, you get SB 1070 in 2010. You know, you get such similar measures in Alabama, in Oklahoma, on local levels, and it creates this runway for President Trump to then run on a campaign where one of the big planks is illegal immigration is a problem, even legal immigration is a problem. We need to clamp down on it. A lot of his rhetoric sounds exactly like what was said back in 1994, except in more ways, even more demonizing and more more histrionics than what was going on in 1994.
Can you talk about your own reaction to this back when you were a sophomore and what that felt like, and if it sort of impacted and shaped the work that you do today?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people, they tie their political, a lot of Latinos of my generation tie their political awakening to 187.
Yeah.
It also did for me, but it took 5 years after 187 passed. So when it passed, I was just sad. And I thought to myself, well, I'm glad I didn't walk out because it didn't beat it. But 5 years later in 1999, I'm from Anaheim. So the Anaheim Union High School District Board of Trustees wanted to sue Mexico for $50 million for educating the children of undocumented immigrants. And that's when it finally hit me because I was one of those children. The school district was saying that people like me were destroying the education for American citizens, even though I'm an American citizen. So in my essay that I wrote for the LA Times, I talk about how even though I didn't march in 1994, in 1999, I was the very first person to address the school board the day that they passed that resolution. And I've been trying to make up for it ever since, me not walking out. And it's 20 years now that I've had a journalism career.
That's really interesting. I wonder if as you've watched the president's campaign, as you've watched the kind of rhetoric he's used about immigration, it's struck you that this is not the first time or the last that this has been a narrative in this country, right? Like, immigrants have always been demonized and there's always been sort of a push and pull there. What do you think we should learn here?
Learn those lessons of what happened. Learn that if after a while something's going to give in terms of people being tired of getting demonized by politicians, and they will activate, they will go into politics. They will, in some cases, they'll just be more proud of being Mexicans. And one of the things that I talk about in my podcast is this waving of the Mexican flag during these rallies. One of the things that 187 did was really awaken the Latino or really Mexican pride in a lot of these students. I talked to one student, he was undocumented when he came to this country. He was a sophomore in high school, just like me. And he thought he was as American as apple pie. He didn't want burritos. He didn't want anything. After 187 happened, though, he just got this awakening. Now he's in charge of a group called, his name's Jerry Correa. He's in charge of something called the California Latino Youth Leadership Project, which gets Latino students from all over the state every summer in Sacramento and teaches them these lessons. Say, have pride in your Latino identity by participating in the American electoral process. And none of this would have happened without 187. If the 187 proponents would have just stayed quiet, a lot of those Latinos would be voting Republican instead of being Democrat and refusing to vote for any sort of Republican in California. I predict, just because we've gone through this in California, the same will happen across the United States. I mean, you saw that in Arizona with Joe Arpaio not winning election, with Russell Pierce not winning election. Latinos, after a while, like, we can only take so much abuse.
All right. Gustavo, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Gracias for having me.
So how was the impact of Prop 187 felt here in Arizona, and did a similar backlash happen here? For more on that, let's now bring in Steve Gallardo, Maricopa County Supervisor and former State Senate Minority Leader. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
So I want to start with just that basic question, and you heard Gustavo sort of start to answer it there in that last question I asked him. But what was the effect, you think, of 187 here in Arizona? Do you see a direct tie to 1070?
Oh, definitely, definitely. But it started even before 1070. I mean, you got to keep in mind, prior to 1070, we in Arizona always looked at California. Whatever happened in California eventually came over to Arizona. You saw the proposition to make English the official language. You saw the ending of bilingual education, an initiative to end bilingual education. You saw the initiative to end affirmative action. So you saw initiatives coming in. even before 1070. And then in 2003, July of 2003, Russell Pierce filed what they called Proposition 200. And that was similar to Proposition 187. Proposition 200 had a ban on voting without ID. It required voter ID. The discussion was that many undocumented were voting in our election, even though there was no proof at that time, and even today, no proof that undocumented are voting in our election. But it also had the same type of provisions that would prevent people without documentation from taking advantage of public services. Proposition 200 started it all. And then from there on, it just snowballed. We had Proposition 300 that went after our students and our universities when it came to education. We then went to Proposition 100, 101. There was a series of propositions until we got really the granddaddy of them all, Proposition 1070. That was very punitive, and it really armed law enforcement. It turned law enforcement, our local law enforcement officers, into ICE agents. And that's what really, I think, just generated a whole slew of backlash. That's when Latinos here in Arizona said enough was enough. We're tired of being picked on. We're tired of being targeted, and we are going to do something. And you have saw the ending of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. He was not elected. You saw the author of 1070 and Prop 200 and Prop 300. He was removed. That's Russell Pierce. He was a Senate president. First time a Senate president was recalled in his own district. We're talking a Republican red district. And Democrats and Latinos went in there and removed him. So you saw the same type of backlash from 187. It took Arizona a few more initiatives, I guess, for us to really say enough was enough. But I think you have saw the end of many of these types of issues here in Arizona, at least at the legislative level.
Do you see the backlash in Arizona as the same kind or maybe a slightly different kind in California? Because, you know, in California, pretty much all the statewide elected officials, the entire legislature, all Democrats, that hasn't happened in Arizona. I'm wondering if you see maybe a slightly different type of backlash here than what we saw to the West.
I think what you saw is definitely a new generation of political activism. You see new people. I think Gustavo talked a little bit about it. You see new people who are first generation Americans, where their parents were deported or impacted by many of the hateful type of initiatives like Prop 200 and 1070. You saw the impact on the lower, I guess, the younger generation, young people now getting politically active. They're registering, they're voting, and you're seeing in the numbers here in Arizona. You're seeing the uptick of new Latinos who are getting engaged in our election process. Many of them who were walking with us back in 2010 are now 18 or older. They're now getting involved politically. They're now running for office. So you do see, you may not have seen the switch overnight as California did, but you're seeing a progression of new activism, new elected officials. You're seeing the state turn what people refer to from red to purple. You're now seeing Arizona more of a battleground state on national politics and in the presidential election. So I think you've seen a slower but similar aggression that you saw in California.
All right. That is Steve Gallardo, a Maricopa County Supervisor and former State Senate Minority Leader. Steve, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.